For the Dallas Morning News, I'm Christopher Nguyen. This is part three of a special report, The Death of Botham Jean, Amber Geiger on Trial. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes, go back and start from the beginning to get the whole story. And please note, this episode contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
We begin with breaking news out of Dallas. A jury has been selected for the Amber Geiger murder trial. Geiger is the fired Dallas police officer charged with shooting and killing Botham Jean inside his apartment last year.
On Monday, September 23rd, testimony is scheduled to begin in the trial of Amber Geiger. Jennifer Emily is covering the Amber Geiger trial for the Dallas Morning News. Hi, Jen.
Hello.
So, in our last episode, we discussed the jury in this case with two longtime criminal lawyers, Brad Lawler and Russell Wilson. And to be clear, neither lawyer is involved in the trial of Amber Geiger. You spoke with them about a very key question. How is Amber Geiger expected to defend herself?
They expect Geiger's attorneys to argue she didn't commit a crime and that she made what is called a mistake of fact.
Meaning, literally, she just made a mistake.
Basically, yes. Her attorneys will tell jurors that she thought she was in her apartment, but she was wrong. She thought he was a burglar, but she was wrong. I was surprised to find out that, although the phrase isn't one we hear often, it's a concept Lawler and Wilson say we hear about a lot in police shootings.
So, we haven't heard directly from prosecutors and Geiger's defense attorneys because there's a gag order in this case, correct?
That's right. The judge has forbidden the attorneys involved in the criminal case from talking to the media.
But my understanding is that before the gag order, one of Geiger's attorneys, Robert Rogers, made a statement that hinted at what her defense would likely be.
Yes, Rogers told me, when you look at the law, this was a tragic mistake. But obviously prosecutors disagree. That's part of what I talked with Lawler and Wilson about.
The defense has to show that the mistaken belief was a reasonable belief.
That's Brad Lawler. He is part of the capital murder unit at the public defender's office.
And I think that's where these factors come into play. And the jury must first decide, and the judge will charge, that they first must decide. You got to look at it from her perspective, but you've got to find that it was a reasonable belief. And then you can proceed to find that she had a mistake as to the reasonable belief. But that's the first hurdle the jury is going to have to determine.
And you still have this question, right, that Brad let out with, which, how did she get through this door?
And that's Russell Wilson. He once headed the Conviction Integrity Unit at the Dallas County District Attorney's Office. He's now a defense attorney.
What was going on? Certainly the red mat, the wrong hallway, all of these signs. And then, what do you believe that she saw before she made the decision to shoot? You know, and they will take likely a reckless definition or, you know, certainly there is no dispute. She pulls out her gun and shoots. You know, one would perhaps ask or question, well, you know, weren't there other alternatives certainly than shooting and killing? And I think that whole discussion will be the center focus of the trial. It'll be, you know, a huge issue because it's not clear that a person's not reckless. It's not a mistake of fact. When we're talking about these laws, the whole thing, the great thing about our jury system is the jury decides it, you know, and so it doesn't mean as a matter of law, when I ask that question, that you can go in and do that. No. You know, this is, I think, the correct process. That person has to stand trial. I think they should stand trial in the community where the offense occurred. And then the members of the community selected through a fair process make that decision. And that serves as a safeguard for us folks that might be worried that somebody could come into our house and the same thing could happen to us.
I did want to circle back to one thing, a mistake of fact. Is that a defense that either of you have used as defense attorneys, or was it something that when you were prosecutors, a defense attorney presented at a trial? Is this some experience that you've had before?
I have had a trial using that defense. Some 25, 30 years ago, I represented a young man from Oklahoma who was at that time, he's about 25 years old. He had been married in Oklahoma, and that couple had a child. Then they had gotten divorced, and the judge had awarded joint custody. Well, the judge also ordered that neither party could take the child out of state. Well, in this case, the ex-wife, the mother of the child, who had possession of the child, took the child here to Dallas County to her parents' house. I believe it was in Garland. The defendant, my client, heard about or suspected that they might be down here, and so he drove to Dallas and drove through the alleyway in back of the house where he knew they lived. And in the backyard, there were three little two-year-olds running around the backyard playing. And he thought one was his son. And so he stopped the car, got out of the car, said the boy's name, and one of these little tots comes running over to the fence. Well, he snatches up that child, thinking it was his child, and took off. He gets charged with kidnapping because it turns out the one he got was not his own son, but a cousin of the son. They all looked alike.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I mean, they all look.
You have people thinking strangers can pick up their kids.
Little blonde-haired kids running around the backyard. Well, he was charged with kidnapping. We went to trial. We presented mistake of fact, and the jury believed him, believed his mistake was reasonable, and found him not guilty. So I have had that experience, and that's been so many years ago, but...
And I've used it in a number of different cases, but just some of the more common ones folks may know or have seen. You know, mistake of fact is the same thing that you're hearing when you hear the police say, "We thought he had a gun." Mistake of fact is Trayvon Martin with the Skittles, and the mistake of fact is the New York City case with the cell phone on the stairs. The police shoot the man. So that is what people are arguing when they say we believed that it was something else and we acted in defense. And so I've had folks that have had cases where they thought that a gun was pointed at them in the same way that we've seen it. So mistake of fact isn't anything new. It's been around a long time. It comes up regularly in our courts in Dallas.
Jen, I wanted to ask you about something else in this case. You've written about how Geiger changed her appearance after she began showing up in court. There was some criticism of that story.
Yes, but it's noteworthy when considering how she will appear to a jury. When Geiger made her first appearance after she was indicted for murder, she dressed like a detective might, in black and blue. She had her hair pulled back into a ponytail. By the next appearance, her long blonde hair was down, and she wore a light-colored suit.
Amber Geiger was required to physically be in the building. That's her you see there, wearing the white suit. She and her attorneys were here for a little less than an hour before they walked out.
When I first began asking attorneys about the change in her appearance, I wasn't sure I would write about it. But this isn't about a makeover. This is a trial strategy. I spoke with defense attorneys who have changed their clients' looks for court. Attorneys want someone to look at Geiger and think, "She looks like my sister or my daughter." They want someone to think, "I like her suit." Similarly, when Balch Springs police officer Roy Oliver was tried for the murder of Jordan Edwards, he shaved his beard and wore a suit for trial.
So, in other words, in this context, appearances matter. What's coming up next as we get closer to the trial?
Well, reporter Dana Branham and I will talk about what evidence the jury could hear in the Geiger case.
And we'll be listening. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
Please help support our journalism and new projects like this one by visiting dallasnews.com/audio. We have an exclusive offer there just for listeners. If you're looking for more of our audio reporting, subscribe to our daily news briefings and special reports by searching for the Dallas Morning News on any podcast platform. This episode was produced by Benjamin Robinson, Jennifer Emily, Marcia Alert, and Christopher Wynn, with editing by Matt Peterson. Our music is by Jason Reimer. And special thanks to our partners at NBC5. Until next time, thanks for listening.